You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, August 24th, 2017.
I do see a lot of people angry and woken up to the necessity to redirect a whole set of things in this country.
Kate Hess-Pace founded the empowerment organization Hoosier Action in April, and already the group is making headlines. Hess-Pace joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk, coming up later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks residents how they feel about IU students coming back into town. But first, these local headlines.
Forfeiture laws allow the police to confiscate items from watches to wallets to your motor vehicle, and they've been challenged in Indiana by two lawsuits. Attorney Jeff Cardella heads his own law firm and is faculty at Indiana University's School of Law. Cardella recently won a class action lawsuit that challenged Indiana's forfeiture laws. Cardella said the way the law was written, law enforcement could hold a vehicle without taking action for up to 180 days. If the state does file a forfeiture claim, the vehicle can be held indefinitely until the case is completed.
The way the law is written, they can take that vehicle and basically just hold it indefinitely until trial, so months or even sometimes years. So, for example, if the police were to take your vehicle and try to forfeit it, they just get to keep the vehicle indefinitely. You have no right to a probable cause hearing or anything like that.
U.S. District Judge Jane Magnus Stinson ruled in favor of Cardella earlier this month. Magnus Stinson found that Indiana's forfeiture law violates due process because it doesn't allow individuals to challenge a forfeiture before their property is seized.
So in this case, we were basically arguing the way the law is written is unconstitutional. Because of that lack of some sort of early hearing or early opportunity for the vehicle owner to challenge the seizure, and obviously the judge agreed with that.
Cardella said the ruling only applies to the forfeiture of motor vehicles and only in Indianapolis's Marion County. However, he says the lawsuit creates precedent for other counties where a vehicle forfeiture would, in all likelihood, be overturned.
Basically, this order is an injunction, so it doesn't specifically apply to other counties, but if your car, since the law was declared unconstitutional, if somebody has a forfeiture going on in another county, it's relatively easy to just basically file a suit in federal court because the law has already been unconstitutional, and they would get the car back relatively quickly and be very likely to win that case because, like I said, a federal judge has already found the statute unconstitutional.
The State Court of Appeals also ruled that an alert from a drug-sniffing dog isn't enough evidence to seize cash.
The city of Bloomington has officially updated its municipal code, allowing bicyclists to ride on certain sidewalks around the city. Beth Rosenbarger, bicycle and pedestrian coordinator for the city, said three new updates were applied to the city code.
We added more kind of safety standards that if a bicyclist, skateboarder, pedestrian, any vulnerable user is on a street and passed by a motor vehicle, that vehicle has to give them at least 3 feet safe passing distance. And we also kind of differentiated between what is a multi-use trail, multi-use path, and a sidewalk, which oddly is actually very important kind of for different legal reasons, and then basically tried to give bicyclists and skateboarders or people, quote, using coasters more legal protections under the city code.
Rosenbarger said decriminalizing of bicycles on sidewalks means that cyclists and skateboarders still need to yield and pedestrians have the right of way.
Part of that involves actually legalizing biking on the sidewalk, which we actually referred to as decriminalizing it, only when people do that in a safe manner, meaning they have to yield to pedestrians, they need to slow down at driveways and intersections, and if they were to pass a pedestrian on a sidewalk, they have to give an audible signal, so a bell or saying, I'm on your left, and then maintain at least 3 feet between the bicyclist and the pedestrian so that you don't obviously brush up against somebody or scare someone.
Rosenbarger also said the updated city code would not allow bicyclists to bike on sidewalks in downtown Bloomington.
There is also a specific downtown dismount area where no one will be allowed to bike or use a coaster on sidewalks, and that is predominantly the Courthouse Square, Kirkwood, and Restaurant Row on 4th Street.
The full changes to the city's municipal code can be viewed on the city's website under Title 15.
The Bloomington Board of Park Commissioners approved a call to remove up to 100 deer at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve this winter. Natural Resources Manager Steve Cotter told the board in its August 22nd meeting that deer are stripping the forest understory and destroying plant diversity in areas where they feed the most.
The goal of this proposed sharpshooting effort is to remove enough deer from the nature preserve to reduce the browse pressure on understory plant species and seedling trees to the point where these species are able to recover and to once again grow at Griffey Lake.
The city will pay deer management organization White Buffalo, Inc. up to $35,000 to conduct the cull between November 15th and February 28th. Cotter said the exact timing of the hunt will depend on the weather and the availability of food beyond the bait set out for deer. Cotter said safety is a priority. Hiking trails that cross into the Lake Griffey Nature Preserve will be closed during the cull.
Sharpshooting would take place from elevated stands, so the trajectory of bullets would be down into the ground. Where possible, baited stations will be located away from human habitation and near earthen backstops. A private security firm would be hired by the city to patrol the area and to advise members of the public of the temporary closure of the property during the sharpshooting activities.
This is not the first deer cull the city has attempted at Griffey Lake.
The first attempt to reduce the size of the deer herd at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve via sharpshooting occurred in 2014. And it was unsuccessful due to a large acorn crop that winter that interfered with the timing of the appearance of the deer at the bait stations.
Some area residents say the Griffey Lake deer population is not large enough to warrant a cull. Board member Joe Hoffman questioned Cotter on this point.
There's also been a point raised, you know, why not go out and count the deer first? I know this came up a couple of years ago, but I'd like to hear your take on that issue.
It did, and we would love to know how many deer are out on the nature preserve, but it is not considered to be as important as the effects on the vegetation.
The board unanimously approved contracting with sharpshooters from White Buffalo Incorporated to carry out the deer cull. Board Chair Les Coyne stressed the fact the commissioners have a responsibility to preserve and protect the area.
We took on responsibility for Griffey Lake many years ago, and part of that responsibility was to preserve it. And I brought up earlier the fact that we have a state-designated preserve there. That means preserve it. And I take that seriously. I take it as a fiduciary role for myself on behalf of the people of this community to do whatever we can to do our best to preserve Griffey Lake for generations to come in some semblance of the order that it was in when we got it. And it was a beautiful forest and a beautiful facility and a beautiful piece of land. And it's not quite that now.
According to Cotter, the city will need a long-term deer management plan for Griffey Lake with or without a successful cull.
We are currently looking into a new program conducted by the Indiana Department of Natural Resources that may help reduce the cost of deer management in future years. It is called the Community Hunting Access Program, and it's designed to increase hunting opportunities for white-tailed deer in urban environments and help alleviate human-deer conflicts. The program provides partners with financial and technical assistance to administer hunting programs in their communities.
Neighboring Brown County State Park and Morgan Monroe State Park use controlled community hunts to manage their deer populations. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from Bloomington Pride, presenting Pride Fest on Saturday, August 26th in downtown Bloomington. Pride Fest celebrates the LGBTQ community and culture and features a Pride rally, education workshops, live performances, family activities, and local vendors. Details on Facebook and at bloomingtonpride.org/pridefest.
Kate Hess Pace comes from a long line of Hoosiers. Concerned about politics and the world around her, especially those in need, she left Indiana in 2010 to work as a community organizer in Minnesota. She returned this year to help Southern Indiana people build blocks of power and it's hoped improve their lives. Founder of Hoosier Action, Hess Pace joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here, and my guest in the studio this week, Kate Hess Pace. Thanks for being on Big Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Kate is a social justice warrior. And a fellow by the name of Jesse Meyerson, who apparently has helped you set up Hoosier Action, he has this quote on you. She is a visionary organizer.
Well, I think all good organizers, of which there are many across the country, ultimately we're optimists who believe and can start to see a better world and have committed ourselves and our lives to that, to the task of getting closer to that world.
Optimist. Right before we started this recording, we talked about, well, who's at fault for the state we're in these days? And I threw it out there that, hey, the citizenry has been asleep. But you said, hey, wait a minute, mister.
The reason why people don't have what they need or have less in communities is because of a power disparity. Our work is to organize people into collective blocks to build power so they can win the things they need in the world. So it's less of individuals aren't doing what they should and more how do we build and be a vehicle so that we can collectively build power and win things like higher wages or paid sick time or end predatory lending. And none of that will happen without building power. Part of what you're doing, and sometimes people call community organizing being a democratic practitioner. So you are teaching and training and working with people to build their capacity to act for themselves and their communities.
That would be democratic with a small d?
Yes. And also I would say because other people in this country are clear about power, they have constructed a set of things that have eroded both our democracy and the power of our individual vote. So yes, your vote matters, and we're going to be working hard on the elections, but there are many, many other ways for people to exercise and build power for change.
Just a couple of weeks ago, a whole bunch of groups from around the nation got together, went to Washington, and went into the various senators' offices while the ACA repeal was being argued, and did actions at these offices. It was called Kill the Bill, Don't Kill Us.
We sent five people, four members of Hoosier Action. We're affiliated with a national group called the Center for Popular Democracy, which has community organizing groups across the country. And they brought people from all 50 states to go into each Republican senator's office that was going to vote to repeal the ACA.
Were there arrests?
Yes. Taking arrest isn't something that we take lightly, and it's not something we'll do regularly, but it is a tool in the toolbox of ways that we assert and build our power. And for us, we've been talking to hundreds of people who stand to lose their health care if the ACA was repealed. And so that, for us, required disruption to make our voices as loud as possible that this vote was going to kill people across the state of Indiana.
This is disruption in terms of civil disobedience.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Does it work?
It certainly has through the course of the history of social change. It is always needs to be a tactic embedded inside of a larger strategy. So it's not like we just disrupted participated in civil disobedience. We've called and we met with Senator Donnelly, state director, and we've collected lots of stories. We had op-eds placed in the Washington Post and on Mike.com about Hoosiers that would be hurt by this vote. So it works if it's embedded inside of a larger strategy, which is what you saw over time through the civil rights movement.
You were here growing up with your family in Bloomington. Then about 2010, you dashed off to Minnesota to work with a group called Isaiah. What's that all about?
Isaiah is a organization across the state of Minnesota that does faith-based community organizing. So they work largely with faith institutions, and that's really where I cut my teeth as an organizer and learned skills and led a set of campaigns around mostly economic justice issues and then defeating the voter ID amendment that was on the ballot in 2012.
Would some of those same issues be at play here in Indiana in 2017 and beyond?
Absolutely. I got an email this morning about a new payday product that is coming through. And Indiana doesn't have great laws for everyday consumers. And in fact, even in this town, there's a bunch of subprime car lending that happens so that people that have low or no credit are the most likely to be ripped off and charged interest rates up to 300%.
What odd days we're in.
It is a strange moment in this country's history. Yes, it is.
Sort of a crossroads.
I kind of hope it's a crossroads. I like I said, I'm in a vocation of optimists, not unstrategic optimists, maybe pragmatic optimists. And I do see a lot of people angry and woken up to the necessity to redirect a whole set of things in this country.
Are there a lot of people who just think that the whole system's corrupt and so why should I bother?
Yes, there are. And there's a lot of people that are kind of mired in shame and despair. And a lot of the work of bringing people, of organizing, is bringing people out of kind of a personal shame and a despair that things can't get better and that the world just comes at them over and over toward some belief that we can collectively be a part of something better.
So in a way, part of your job is to get out there and sort of grab people by the shoulder and say, come on with me. Is
that
true?
I mean, I think so. I think organizing in some ways is a set of deep and powerful invitations for people to think differently about who they are in the world and what's possible, and to take a couple steps forward towards that vision.
And one of the ways to do that is to knock on doors.
Yes.
Which you have done here in Indiana already in your three short months.
It's true, yeah.
You've had the door knock action. You were concerned about cuts in Medicaid.
Yes, but so I should say, so Hoosier Action, we're a base building organization. So
yes.
That means we don't advocate on behalf of, but try to build a base where people are really leading the organization. And we're member owned and driven.
Uh-huh.
So the door knocking, the catalyst for it was really the potential cuts to Medicaid and also what Governor Holcomb is trying to do in terms of a work requirement on Medicaid. But the conversation with people is much longer and expansive. And then we try to follow up with people as much as possible and bring them into the organization. So the door knocking is not just a one-off conversation, but a longer attempt to build relationships with people across the county. And I should say we're also working outside of this county.
Always the optimist. Kate Hess Pace, social justice warrior. She's a community organizer, director of Hoosier Action. Kate, thanks for joining us on Big Talk.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
You can hear that episode and all episodes of Big Talk with Michael Gleb on our website, WFHB.org. Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317 877-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next is our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, how do you feel about the students returning to town? With over 48,000 students getting back to town, the change that the city of Bloomington undergoes when classes meet is significant. It becomes more challenging to find parking and restaurants are more crowded. On the other hand, there is a youthful buzz and energy around town. Voices has asked your friends and neighbors how they feel about the students returning.
Well, we were talking about it, and it's going to pick up on the traffic, but we like the buzz when they're in town. It's a happy buzz in town. Dylan said that this was like an oasis in the Midwest, and I think Bloomington is like an oasis.
I've been away for a long time, so I always look forward to having students come back. Brings life to the town and another generation, and, you know, it's nice the summer when we have less traffic, less people, but I enjoy the students.
We feel great. We love the students. Yeah. We miss them in the summer because they bring life and energy to Bloomington and IU.
I'm excited about the new year, I guess. I don't know. They're coming in droves. They're walking around those orientation packs. But other than, you know, taking up the advisor's time, got no problem with it.
Seasonal wave. I think a lot of them need to be careful when they drive.
Well, it's nice to be in a quiet town when they're gone, but they pay the bills too, so I guess it's good to have them back.
It'll be harder to get across the streets, but other than that, they keep things busy. I was a grad student here myself, so, but never an undergrad here.
Excited for it.
Yeah?
What's
that?
So I work in the bar business, so over the summer we're just dead, especially July. Falls down quite a bit, so students bring a nice vitalization to the town, I would say.
Oh, I love it. People talk about how nice it is to be able to park downtown, but a college town is all about kids, and I really, really prefer it when they're here.
I love it. I work on campus for the university, and I just love being around students and working. You know, it's my life, so I've been here 20 years, and it's like, it's part of fall.
I'm excited. Because without students, I wouldn't have a job.
What do you
and
do?
They're great. You know, they just bring a youth and exuberance to campus. So I love them.
I think it's a good thing. That's what the community is, university community is based on. So we pretty much need them to come back into town. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad for it. Well, I work for IU in finance, and so it's job security, I guess you would say.
I don't want them to come back. Because everything's busy. Yeah.
Looking forward to it. Lots of energy. Good to walk around and have people doing things. It's like a buzz, right? You know, when you go into a restaurant and lots of people there chatting, have a good time.
Oh, just adds more activity to the city. Makes it more interesting.
It's awesome. Yeah, you know, it's nice to have a little break in the summertime, but the energy is fantastic when the students come back. So,
I guess I'm all right with it. It's kind of like dead with nobody around. It's kind of nice that there's a time of the year when it's not just crawling with students, crowding up the streets and the restaurants and everything. But I don't know, it's livelier with students around.
Love them.
Yeah.
Why is that? Well, I think Bloomington depends on the students. It's part of why we're here, the university and everything. So I think it's great. Bring them on.
I think it's great. I'm looking forward to it. It just brings a new life to the town, and we like all the activities that come along with it. So we're looking forward to sports season coming up. So
we're ready for them. Work for the Department of Theater and Drama.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment. featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Russ Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Provosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Blueing Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.